This is Phil Farron.
And I am driving home. It has been a gorgeous, gorgeous day today. I don't know what we did to earn this weather this summer, but typically in the middle of August, which is when I'm recording this, we are running 95, 98, occasionally 100, high humidity. I mean, it's usually pretty hot around here in the summer, and this summer has been extremely mild. I mean, it is just gorgeous today. There's a light breeze. It's beautiful. Anyways, it is episode 22. Last week, I promised you a great story. Here's the great story. A week ago Sunday, it was my daughter's birthday, and I was sitting in church that morning. We were all going over to my wife's parents for dinner because we have the happy privilege of having both sets of grandparents in town now, and so we actually rotate around Sunday dinner, and we all go over to each other's houses and spend Sunday dinner together, and it's really a lovely time is had by all. Anyway, so a couple of weeks ago, a week ago Sunday, it was my daughter's birthday, and I was sitting in church, and as I was sitting there, this thought just dropped into my head, and I thought, oh, well, there you go. And I have had a tradition throughout I and my daughter's relationship of occasionally having times when I would bless her or, have a little something to share with her on special occasions like birthdays or high school graduations or when she was leaving for college and, you know, those types of, before her and Alan got married, those types of things. And this little thought dropped into my head, and it had all the characteristics of one of those things that I would say to her on special occasions, but I really didn't have anything planned, per se, to say to her, but I thought, well, okay, you know, maybe when we get to all sit down for the meal, maybe I will get chosen to pray for the meal, and then as part of my prayer for the meal, I will just tuck this in, and that's what this is to be used for. Okay, fine. So I tuck it back in my spirit, and church is over, I go over to Lynette's parents, and we all sit down for the meal, yada, yada, yada. And Lynette's dad says to my dad, well, Bill, why don't you go ahead and pray for the meal? And so I think, oh, well, okay, not going to pray for the meal, that's fine, maybe I'll just pull Lizzie off to the side here afterwards, and I'll just tell her it then, and it'll be fine. So we go through the whole meal. And the meal is very good, of course. And I noticed that Nana, which is what I call Lynette's mom, Nana and Papa, I noticed that Nana has made some little bundt cakes, and they have little candles in them. And she's over there before she's serving dessert, and she's lighting all the candles. And my son-in-law is actually talking to her, and he's saying, you know, Nana, you don't need to light all those. We'll just light Lizzie's, and she can just blow it off. And Nana's, or blow it out. Sorry. Nana is just keep doing what she's doing, and everybody gets distributed, and then she sits down, and then she smiles a little bit, and she says, now, what I'd like us to do is I'd like us to go around the circle, and everyone should tell Lizzie something that they appreciate about her, or maybe bless her with something, or say a little prayer for her or something, and then we'll blow out the candles. And I'm thinking, yeah, okay, this is why I got this thought 2 hours ago. So I'm sitting there, and then Nana says, well, and I'm not sure who'll go first. Maybe I'll go first. And then she kind of looks at her husband, and he says, well, I'll go first. Well, he was sitting right beside me, which meant I had the last slot. So I'm thinking, oh, yeah, okay, here we go. So and we go around the circle. Everyone has very nice things to say about my daughter, Lizzie, because she really is a beautiful young lady, very disciplined, just good, wholesome, lovely. She is just lovely. And anyways, it's going around. Now, I should tell you that she, like every other person as she was growing up, There were a few bumps along the way. She certainly didn't go through any kind of huge rebellious stage, but there were a few little bumps along the way, and there were a few things she was working out in her life, and certainly everybody gets a right to make whatever decisions they were going to. And frankly, there were a few times when I was kind of wondering, you know, I was going, come on, Lizzie, make the turn, make the turn, make the turn. By that, I mean really commit to the disciplined life. She was always disciplined in her stuff, but she had allowed herself some areas where she was just kind of coasting along. But, you know, when she got to be 17 or 18, she made the commit, and it's just been wonderful to watch. And the older she gets, the more steady she gets, and the more focused she gets. And it's really wonderful to watch. So against that backdrop, it goes around the circle, eventually comes to me. And I paused, and I started tearing up. And I told everybody, I said, you know, God dropped something into my spirit in church today, and I didn't know what it was for, and I went through the whole story with them. And by this people around the table, they're starting to tear up because my voice is cracking. And I turned to my daughter and I said, Lizzie, I said, he has been to you the warm sun, and he has been to you the gentle rain, and he has been to you the nourishing soil. And I cannot tell you how privileged and honored I feel to be able to have watched you grow, because it is in him that we live and move and have our being. Now, that may not mean much to you, but when I started in on that, I mean, even before I started, Lizzie's crying over there. And as I'm talking to her, she's looking back through her life, and I mean, it's resonating with her. And when I got to the part where I started saying, because it is in him we live and move, she just, you know, broke down, started crying and nodding her head, and she's going, I know. It was so wonderful. It was just so wonderful. It's one of those father-daughter moments, you know, that's just so spectacular. Well, what was really cool about it was I got this thought hours before I knew what it was for, because we don't do this all the time. We don't have blessing sessions all the time. And what was even cooler is that God had whispered to Nana days before, apparently, and said, you know, you should do so and so and so and so and so. And then we just happened to sit around the table in the right order. And then Papa volunteered to go first. And as you look back, you see all these little domino pieces that were set up where when they fell, they all just fell beautifully. And it was really a wonderful, wonderful time. So anyways, that's my good story. Anyways, I had actually planned to start talking about a couple of other things this week. But last Friday, after I had done the podcast Thursday, I had gone in to have breakfast with a friend, and then I was killing some time because I was waiting for the movie store to open so I could exchange the movie. And last Friday, I was on MSN.com and I came across this article. And it was about a lady who had come across a book and a movement, I guess we'll call it. And I don't know, I have no idea why it took me so long to hear about this. But it's called A Complaint-Free World. And I started reading down this article and I'm like, hey, this is pretty good. I like this. Anyways, there was this minister in Kansas City, Missouri. His name was Will Bowen. I think that's the way you say his name. And he had this idea. He had this idea to say, okay, what would it be like to go 21 days without complaining? Because his approach is that complaining is like negative energy, and our lives would be better if we didn't complain so much. There was actually an article, a quote from him in this article. He says, when we complain, we are using our words to focus on things that are not as we would like. Our thoughts create our lives, and our lives indicate what we are thinking. It is vital that we control our minds in order to recreate our lives. Okay, well, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. And so this columnist, she had decided she was going to try this. So this guy also had a great idea that he would have these wristbands, like Livestrong, you know, the silicone wristbands. He has a complaint-free world.org on it. And that every time you caught yourself complaining, what you had to do is you had to take it off one hand and put it on the other wrist. And that motion would remind you that you're not supposed to complain. Of course, then your count restarts and you're back to trying to get to beat 21 days. And even this minister said that the first day he tried this, I think he said he stopped counting after he had switched it 20 times. Because we just don't realize how much we are complaining. Well, this particular lady, she said, like, the first time she said to switch it like 100 times, and she's going through this whole process, and her family was doing it with her, and yada, yada, yada. But what was really interesting about this to me was that as she was writing this article, it was really, really interesting to me all the different excuses that were coming out in this article, where she was quoting from all these people with their doctorates in psychology and blah, 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 blah. And she was doing a pretty good job to kind of show both sides, but it was very definitely tilted towards justification of complaining. So, I mean, she went through a bunch of different excuses. Like, at the beginning, she said when she heard about this no complaining, her quote was, well, that just sounded ridiculous to me. Because she said complaining was the glue that held my emotional life together. And she said, I didn't really think of it as complaining. I thought of it as bonding or commiserating or friendship building. And, you know, later on down in, there was the classic excuse, well, that's just my personality. And another place, she had some person talking about the fact that what we really enjoy in people is seeing a wide range of emotions. When people have a wide range of emotions, that makes them colorful and interesting. And she quoted somebody else as saying, let's see, if you don't have something nice to say about anybody, come sit by me. And there was another spot when she was going along and she quoted somebody else and says, well, you know, which is worse? Is it worse to be bitchy or bland? Oh, okay, all right. There was another one where it went into to say, well, you know, that's just genetic. Some people are just genetically predisposed to be, you know, more dour and to have a darker outlook on life and be complainers. You're just born that way. Okay, that's really good. And another person said, you know, the best strategy isn't just to hold it in. I do say you know a lot, and I'm working on that, but when I quote from people, sometimes it slips out. Sorry. Anyways, the best strategy is to state your complaint and get it out quickly and then think about solutions. Okay, well, part of that's pretty good. Part of that's pretty good. And I would agree, it's really great to think about solutions and to get past your complaints really quickly. I should say that the lady ended the article having documented 6 days of trying to go without complaining. And the only day she actually made it without complaining was the day she decided she just wasn't going to talk at all. And that's how she made it through, but she was not happy. Now, I should tell you that Will Bowen's approach is that when he says make it 21 days without complaining, he means without speaking a complaint, because he's trying to get people into a new habit of doing things. And I should add right here, and I will repeat this again, that this is a really good place to start. Okay, really good place to start. Anyway, so the lady documented her progress, that sort of thing. Eventually, she got to day 6 and basically blew out. I mean, she documents how when it comes to day 6, she just finally ripped the wristband off her arm and threw it away. And she said, that's it, I'm done. And her family ripped theirs off and said, yeah, us too, it's about time. And she ended the article by saying, oh, I'm finally back. I got up today. I felt so good. I yelled at my kids. I did this. I'm thinking, oh, man. Because, you see, when you don't really have a framework, when you don't really have an understanding of what's really going on underneath the surface, then a lot of these excuses, they sound good and they sound fine. And as I say, it's a really good place to start with simply deciding you're not going to verbalize your complaints. And that can help to change how you think. But I think it's also very, very important to have an understanding of what's going on underneath. For instance, all these authorities that she quoted, I mean, in my opinion, I look through all those authorities that she quoted and I just say, you know what? That's flesh. That's flesh in every single one of these people trying to justify the complaining mindset. Not because they think that's really what's best for people, but because their flesh within them knows that if it can keep people complaining, it can put them farther on the road to failure. Now, how can I say that? Why is complaining, how does that put you farther on the road to failure? Well, if we back up and we remember the principles that are inside the framework, we remember that everything begins with a belief. That how the flesh controls our lives is it speaks beliefs down into the core of our being that are not true, and those beliefs bubble up and create emotions and create thoughts and create words and create deeds. And you can take any complaint that you have. Well, I just can't believe my wife would serve this food again. We've had this 3 times this week already. You take any complaint. And when you get down to the bedrock of it, there will be a belief underneath it. And I would venture to say that if you really think about it, you will discover that that belief is in fact not true. Because the core of all complaining is, I deserve better. I deserve to have things the way I want them to be. And if they're not the way I want them to be, then I deserve to complain. But the problem with that is it starts with a basic misunderstanding of the truth of life. The fact is, if we're breathing, it's an amazing, miraculous, and wonderful thing. And really, whatever our circumstances are in life, there is always something to be grateful for. There is always something to reflect on and find a way to deal with it in kindness and discipline and focus and all those things. And I'm having to wrap this up a little bit because I'm almost home and I have more to talk about. Anyways, but the problem with complaining is that it's reflecting beliefs that are down into your spirit, and those beliefs are not true. Because the beliefs that the flesh will sow into your spirit are lies. They're always lies. And Jesus said that the truth will set you free, but sometimes we don't flip that around and work the opposite of that corollary. If the truth will set you free, then it's true that lies will bind you. And if you give vent to those beliefs inside you and they become complaints and you rehearse those complaints, what you're doing is you are structuralizing beliefs that are false within the core of your being, and you will begin to view your entire life through that structure. If you complain all the time about the fact that my boss is such a jerk and I can't believe it, okay? If you believe that, then what's going to happen is that every time your boss says something, the first thing you're going to think is, jerk, I can't believe you're talking to me. And that's going to change how you relate to your boss. And unfortunately, then it's going to result in sometimes you saying some things about your boss you shouldn't say. It's going to result in maybe sometimes you saying some things to your boss that you shouldn't say. And it's going to change your world, and it's not going to change your world for the better. I'm getting my mail. Checking for bugs. Okay, so when we give vent to our complaints, what we are actually doing is we are reinforcing the beliefs within our spirit that are not true. And by reinforcing those things, we add to the noise level in our spirit, and we set ourselves up for failure. Now, maybe that failure doesn't come today or tomorrow or the next day. But if you are the type of person who is in constant emotional turmoil and under constant stress of complaining, you know, that has physical consequences long term. I'm getting ready to back into my garage, so I'm going to have to wrap this up. I say all that to say, I'm trying an experiment. I ordered the book. I ordered the wristbands. I ordered enough wristbands that I think I've got wristbands for all of my people that I get together with. And whoever wants to try this with me, we're going to try this. I did have a really interesting experience right after I'm backing into my garage. I did have a really interesting experience right after I read this article on complaining. I have to give you the short version of it because I am backing into my garage. But it was so funny. Because the business that I work for, there are conventions every couple of years where there's voting on how the company is going to do things. It's a religious organization. There's a bunch of voting on how the company is going to do things. And sometimes the IT department approaches those conventions with a bit of fear and trembling. Because sometimes rules can just change overnight. And all of a sudden, they're scrambling to try to fulfill the new requests and those kind of things. Well, we had had a slight rule change this time. And a couple of the guys that I know had gone over to try to figure out with the powers that be exactly what was going to happen. And so they had gone over. They had come back over. I happened to be dinking because I was waiting for the video store to open. So I had dropped into my clients so that I could just surf the internet and do some stuff. Had read this article there. They came in then to tell me what had gone on. And so we were talking through the possibilities and those sorts of things. And I made a determination. I'm not going to allow this stuff to bubble up in my spirit to the effect of, you know, we have got plenty of things to do. I mean, I don't know that we just right now need to be dropping everything and focusing. Okay, that's a complaint, obviously. So I made the determination. You know what? I'm not listening to that. I'm not going there. We're just going to hear what the new rules are. I'm going to say, well, here's an approach we can take. And I did. I said, well, okay. They said we need to do this, track this. I said, okay, well, if we need to track that information, then one of the things that we can do is we can add a new column to the databases. We'll have to track it all the way through. It will mean that I'll have to run through a lot of the stored procedures, update them, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it was going to be a lot of work. That's what it comes down to. And the guy I was talking to, he kind of grimaced and went, oh. I said, well, you know, if we need to track this and this is the current rule, then we'll track it. And I just tried to stay very calm, very collected during the whole thing. Not that I ever scream and holler, you understand, but more so than normal. I tried to just stay very forthright and straight. And he said, okay. And so we talked about it some more and that kind of stuff. And I paused at one point, and then I had this little whisper that said, or you could check this table. And I said, you know, just a second, let me check a table. I go over and I check this one table that's way at the end of the process. And I suddenly realize that the way this table is set up, I can turn this requirement, which is really a reporting requirement, into a reporting requirement, and I can shove it way down at the end of the process, change nothing in most of my contribution processing, go all the way down to the back end and write a couple of statements and support this whole thing with a couple of statements with all the existing data structures intact. And I said, or we could do this. And I go and explain, and they go, oh, that looks like that'll work. And then I smiled at a guy who will have to do a lot of work. I said, it's all you, buddy. Take it. Make your changes. I think my stuff's about done. He said, oh, yeah, gee, thanks. But I say all that to say that if I had started down that initial road because I had a lot of noise in my system and I couldn't get to the fact that maybe I should check that table over there, I would have gotten through the entire process. Because that would have been the very last thing I did. I would have got through the entire process and then looked at that and gone, oh, I could have done this. And I would have cost the money, the company, probably a week worth of work. And I just thought, wow, thank you. Thank you, Jesus. Thank you, Jesus. And I just stayed calm, stayed quiet. Did not even engage in the little bit of complaining that I wanted to do. but just said, no, let's, fine. Whatever we need to do is fine, it's fine. And through that, then, I was able to get to a solution. And you see, for me, that's really the crux of the matter. First of all, I know that complaining is coming from my flesh, whether I speak it or not. And I know that complaining rises directly out of beliefs that are being sown into my flesh, sown into the core of my being by my flesh, and that those beliefs are not true. I know that by complaining, I am reinforcing those beliefs, and those beliefs are creating a structure that will lead me to failure. And also, I know that complaining creates noise in my system, and that noise does not make me a more interesting person. It keeps me from getting to solutions that I could probably get to quicker if I didn't have that noise. So anyways, we're going to see how this goes. I've ordered the book. I have the bracelets. We're going to give this a try. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.